Sana means a healthy mind in a healthy body and radiance. Sana Wellness, the podcast, explores the world of modern wellness through relatable conversations with experts and thought leaders to inspire and empower you on your wellness journey so you can shine your light brighter. I'm your host, Kylie Jane. We're so glad you're here, Sana Light. Today, I'm super excited and honored to be joined by Monique Rogers, ecologist. We're going to be discussing how mindfulness can help us cope with uncertainty, which is something that I think a lot of us are going through at the moment, if not have been through at some stage in our lives, but definitely something that was just made a little bit more difficult or came to the front of people's minds during the COVID period. So very happy to have you here, Monique. Thank you.
Thank you for holding the space, but thank you for asking the questions. Thank you for showing up and providing something that is, I think people want to know about, but there's so much information that is available. There's so much that you can quickly find out through a, you know, mindfulness Google search, you know, and there's so much that we can come into contact with. But how do we discern what is good for us and what isn't? What is relevant to us, depending on our different backgrounds, our different social, economic situations? How do we know what to listen to and what to not? So thank you for this, for setting up the structure for that.
Oh, so welcome. And it's just, so amazing to have you here. And just, you know, a little bit of background around how Monique and I met is actually I took a yoga teacher training course at the beginning of this year, and Monique was one of the incredible teachers on that course. And I just felt that your messaging and your approach and the language that you use around mindfulness and movement and getting us to think about these big concepts in a very relatable and digestible way is something that can help many of us along our journey at some stage. And I know I learned a lot, and I just hope to, you know, together that we're able to share a little bit more throughout this discussion and help others shine their light a little bit brighter through mindfulness. Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your journey, how you got to this place where you've just studied and finished your master's, which is incredible, and started your company, the Golden Wild Movement, which I know you're in the process of kind of rebranding or reworking. But yeah, I would just love to hear your story.
Ooh, thank you. I mean, I just want to set like structure for moving forward. There's going to be a lot of thank you. Like there's a lot of, that's very much ingrained in who I am. It's something that, you know, that came well before, you know, gratitude journals. It's something that was taught to me by my family. And I was actually speaking to my partner about it this morning. I was just reflecting on spending time with my gran as a child and how, although I am, so I'm Indian South African, which essentially just means that we were born in South Africa. We've been in South Africa for upwards of four generations. It's a little bit unclear when we get to like the fourth and fifth, but essentially we were from India, the south of India. And so this is all because of me saying thank you and like what to expect. To set your expectations. That's what I wanted to say. Please just like set your expectations. For every time Kylie says something, I'll be like, thanks, Kylie. Thank you so much. Like after every sort of thing. Because that is
a part of gratitude.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like I said, it's definitely something that came from my grandmother. It's something that came from my mother, something that was, you know, just how we end our days. It's how we start our days. It's like we used to gather as a family at 6 o'clock and we'd light a candle and we'd pretty much just run through what we were thankful for and in prayer, really. And it's just something that has stayed with me throughout, just how I would say, Thank you for the sky. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for the trees. Thank you for the flowers. Thank you for the grass. You know, like that's just something that would that was a part of my vocabulary from a very young age. So, okay, now that we went down that tangent, returning to Kylie's question of giving a little bit of insight into who I am, a little bit about my background, my experience and my skills, perhaps. So I became a yoga teacher 6 years ago. I did my training in India. It was kind of a little bit, this is, I feel like everything I'm going to say has like a little anecdote, but this just to, this is actually something I would like to share because I feel like a lot of yoga teachers can resonate with this. I was going through like a life change and I really wanted to just return to my homeland, India, and do this training under what I'd felt like was my descendants of my ancestors. I felt like I wanted to return to India and do this training that felt like a calling. And I saved up and, you know, I went over and, you know, I landed in India and I felt like I was home. And I took this long taxi drive to where I was meant to meet my guru, I say in inverted commas. Because I had arrived late at night, I could only meet them the next morning. So I lie in the hotel, like really anxious and very, not anxious, excited, really excited to meet them. And I climbed the hill that next morning and I showed up in like what was the hall of the ashram, so to say. And I was met by two women, an American woman and an Australian woman. And I was deeply disappointed. I was just like, what is actually going on here? And my entire training was facilitated by an American and an Australian who were, you know, in their fair right, somewhat like they knew their stuff. So I feel like I wanted to share that because there's this idea of authentic Indian yoga trainings, but then you arrive and it's really not quite like that. And so, yeah,
not sure your eat, pray, love kind of experience.
Yeah, no, nothing quite like that. But I was very lucky to learn the foundation. I came out with good friends, a good basic knowledge. I subsequently did trainings around the body, physiology, yoga and physiology, cognitive behavioral therapy, and MBSR. And I most recently have completed my master's in movement, mind and ecology in the UK at a college in South Devon called Schumacher College. I've been running my business for the last 5 years and I called it Golden Wild Movement. And I went with movement as opposed to yoga because it was more inclusive. I felt like it spoke to a larger audience. And I'm now undergoing like a re-engineering of what I'm offering, primarily just from a very basic level of what I'm calling what I do. And that's because I took on this very Western, you know, if you break it apart, golden, wild movement that are, I want to say Western words, you know, the wild has taken we've seen a resurgence of the word wild, but I think that I'd like to return to things that are closer to my ancestors, things that are closer to my family and to where, and truly honoring where I'm from. And so I'd like to rename my business. I'm sitting with two names at the moment. One, which was my grandmother's Indian name. And second was my great grandmother's first name. Aww. So I'm re-looking at this. And so it will be birthed, I think, in summer, in the Northern Hemisphere summer anyway.
I want to ask, so, you know, getting into the mindfulness and the meditation and that kind of aspect of what you do and what you look at and what you so passionately, you know, taught us during the yoga teacher training, just to reframe, you know, these periods of uncertainty, right? And obviously COVID was one period of that, but people are faced with, you know, periods of uncertainty throughout their life, right? And some people can roll with the punches per se or adapt, right, to changes quickly, while, you know, others might struggle a little bit with that unknown and might experience, you know, other changes in maybe their mood, maybe their sleep, maybe how they, you know, cope with things. And it can be a major, you know, source of stress. And I think mindfulness is, you know, it's kind of become a buzzword. You know, I want to ask you what it means to you, and also why you think it's become such a an important component of modern wellness, and why there is this kind of shift or this focus more to this mindful aspect of us really just trying to slow down or trying to get back into ourselves.
Really juicy, wide question. I hope that I will answer it. So I'll start with essentially what is mindfulness to me and why I decided to start teaching mindfulness, especially because it's not something that was included in my foundational YTT, my foundational yoga teacher training. So mindfulness is being present or being aware of our present moment without any judgment. So being angry or frustrated or upset and allowing it to be whatever it is, to allow the anger to come to surface, to allow the frustration to come to surface, to allow the upsetness, so to say, to come to surface without saying to yourself, Kylie, don't, you know, let's not be frustrated. Let's be happy. Mm-hmm. Let's not be angry. Let's look at the silver linings. You know, this is not the worst thing that can happen. Let's continue. Let's push through. Let's try and navigate this. You know, let's move through this. Mindfulness calls us to say, is the recognition of, okay, you know what? I am angry right now. This is not who I am entirely. My emotion does not equate to who I am. My emotion does not equate my value. And it does not dictate who I am finitely, you know, just because I'm angry now, that doesn't make me an angry person. Just because I'm frustrated now, it does not make me a person who is frustrated. This is just a passing thing. And if we can recognize the emotions in real time, we can recognize, release, instead of the normative narrative, which is not recognizing, hold on, not recognizing and holding on. And so we get this almost overloading of emotions, unprocessed emotions. So mindfulness allows us to process the emotions in real time. I think this is important. I had a little anecdote, as all my responses will have anecdotes.
I
was having a disagreement with my second eldest sister, and I like wasn't in a space where I wanted to communicate with. I was like, I just want to be upset, and I'm going to reach out to you, but I'm not ready. So she sends me a message. Oh my word, I was so upset. She says to me, she's like, you know, I didn't expect this of you because you're a mindfulness teacher. Like, I really did not expect this. I was furious. And essentially my response to her, I didn't even write it. I was just like, I went to her house. I mean, we live very close to each other. And I was like, this is not like who my profession. I would like to think that I've mastered certain aspects of it to be a better person, of course, and a better teacher. But I teach this essentially. I teach these tools because I need them. And it's in that, it's in that very personal relationship with my work that makes me a good teacher. Because I'm not teaching something that I think I know better than anyone else. It's more like, I know this to work.
Right.
I've used this in my own life. I've used this with my family, most importantly. I know that this can help. But of course, and this is also something I really want to emphasize, is that the things that people will share, the things that we will share in this podcast, the things that you will hear are true for me. And maybe, Kylie, you can agree with me. I would go on a limb and say that I know that you agree with some of the tools and the techniques because we worked together in the past. But it's really important for every individual to be able to discern what is for them and what is not for them, because there is so much information out there. There is so much information on mindfulness meditation as just a little drop in the ocean. There are so many other things that we are being advised on: what to eat, what to wear, what to put into our bodies, what vitamins to take. That we must understand that each body and each person needs something totally different from the other. And so it really is our own work to decide what is good. So if I say to you, journaling is a great exercise, try that, test it, see if it is something that works for you. Try it for 7, 14, 21 days. If by the end of 21 days, you're like, wow, I really gave that a try, it's not for me, then you know. Then you know that it's not for you. But it's very important to take what you need and leave the rest behind, because if we were to take on all the advice that we have ever heard, everything that we've read on Google, it's too much for us to carry. It's not all our own. So it's very important is understand that each of our journeys is unique. And I know that that's frustrating because sometimes we just want somebody to say, this is what's good for us. I understand that. But that is, so that answers the question, what is mindfulness?
No, I think really just resonated with me. And I think it's important to, like you said, for every individual to operate from a place of curiosity and operate from that place of and non-judgment too in testing things out, right? Because I know I see it in my work, which is nutrition. And just like what you said, now people will come to me and say, Kylie, just tell me what to eat. I just want to plan. Just tell me breakfast, lunch, dinner, times, like how much. And yes, there is a science behind a lot of what we speak about. There's a science behind mindfulness. There's the science behind nutrition and what, will nourish our bodies, but it changes from individual to individual and from time to time, right? So the journaling might work for you for 15 days and then it doesn't bring you that same amount of joy. So it's this continuous just operating from a place of curiosity, I think, and willing to try things and what is nourishing to you? Kind of keep asking yourself that question. Is this nourishing me? Whether it's food or, a mindfulness tool.
I mean, I absolutely agree with you there. Operating from a place of curiosity, it's almost I'm going to go ahead and say this. It is operating from a place of curiosity is innately anti-capitalist. It's innately a reclaiming of your life. It's a reclaiming of the process of living. It's a reclaiming of joy. It's saying, you know what? I'm going to take this thing, this one thing that is my life, and I'm going to take it into my own hands. I'm going to give myself the agency that I so long for. I'm going to surrender to being wrong. I'm going to surrender to taking up the practice of journaling and be okay if it doesn't work out. I was trying to think of a nutritional analogy and I was like, no, that's not my forte. Move on.
Return to journaling. Stick to.
Yeah. Essentially just, I think, I just feel like, and this, it ties back into what I was going to say in responding to your first question, Kylie, which was, why do we need mindfulness right now? Why has it become a buzzword? It's because I think there is this collective longing that has always been there. I think that it existed in our parents. I think it existed in our grandparents, but there were different barriers. There were different limitations that allowed them or did not allow them to actually dip into it, to dive into it. And we are the generation that actually get to realize that we're not the only ones, because I think that although this collective longing to connect to the self, to know the self, existed in previous generations, but because there wasn't the communication, there wasn't the communication between friends because there were different challenges of the times, and so here we are with the privilege of technological progression or the ease or the permission to truly speak what we are feeling or to share what we are feeling. So now we know that we're all feeling it. And so now there are these tools that are surfacing, that are saying, use me to find out more about the self, to potentially find out more about yourself. And so it's almost presenting itself as a shiny panacea, which I would like to address because it is something that is very helpful. But there is work to be done, I say in inverted commas, and I struggle with explaining what I mean when I say the work. It's what essentially, in plain terms, it's not necessarily as easy as we want it to be. It's going to require that curiosity. It's going to require being wrong about certain things or surrendering to being wrong so that we can be right, so that we can find the things that do work for us. And I think we've been, from a very young age, we've been conditioned. We've been given things, right? Like we've known these formulas of what to eat, like what on our plate. We've always been, and that's why vegetarianism was were received with such resistance initially, because we were told that protein equates to meat. That's right, it. And so we were like, oh, what do you mean? There are other alternatives. You know, this was really, this was like an uproar for our generation, or the, you know, just a few years ago. And we were always told what to do. We were always told about, even in the way we write academically, professionally, there was an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. Mm-hmm. There was no uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There was no unclarity. Mm-hmm. Always, this is what you need to do. Right. When we were in high school, we were told, we would, I don't know if you did the same thing, but we did something called aptitude tests.
Yes,
Kylie.
Yes.
So,
yes.
In, yes.
Oh, so, which was just, you know, way, way too confusing and overwhelming for me, because there were so many things I wanted to do. And then I had like four things that I, you know, technically could choose from. And I was like, but, you know, what if I want to be something more? But yeah.
Yeah. So just returning to the aptitude tests and how we were groomed to understand that there was always, we always knew the step ahead and the next, you know, the the three after that. But when we got to 18, if you did not know at the age of 17 or 18 what you wanted to do for the rest of your life, you know, there was a problem. There was a problem. If you didn't know that, you would need to sit and take an aptitude test and decide in 7 to 14 days what you wanted to do so that you could make the right university applications. And so for the first and most valuable years of our lives, we were always told that we needed to know what to do. We, there was no room for uncertainty. There was no room for anything else but clarity. And so, of course, we favor this.
You're right. For the first, you know, 18 or so years of our lives and beyond, right? Traditionally, you went to school, you went to university, and then you got a job and you retired at 60. That was the way it was. It was, there was no YouTube sensations at 23. And the economic turmoil that we've seen, you know, from 2008 onwards. So we were used to things being set up for us, or trying to come up with those answers, right? So now in this era where things are uncertain and things are changing by the day and by the year, and careers look completely different and how we work looks completely different. And yeah, it's, it is, I think now with these periods of uncertainty, it's even more terrifying because our brains will make decisions for the future based on our past experiences. But when the future is uncertain and we're experiencing something new, we can't really rely on those past experiences. We're looking to some external force or something to help us and guide us, right? And I think that comes back to your point of we're seeking, right? And we're trying to look within, or if we're unable to look without or on the outside, it leads us to look externally, exactly. Without, within, we have to sit with ourselves a little bit more and kind of have those conversations of what do I want? What does it look like? There are these, you know, in X amount of possibilities.
So just to close off that question then, why mindfulness has grown in interest? Why has it become interesting for the current collective, or for us at the moment? Why are we having this conversation? Because it is, it's integrative. It's something that doesn't require you to necessarily set out a 90 minutes or a 60 minute session for a yoga practice, or the things that, or the requirements that come with a yoga practice. It requires you in the moment recognizing nothing about your day needs to change. If you wanted to start being mindful and you applied that to your day, nothing needed change other than your awareness. You don't need to change the tasks. You don't need to change your schedule. You don't need to change who you're interacting with, nothing like that needs to change. Your location, nothing. Mm. It's the same day can be lived very differently just through changing your awareness to that situation. And so it makes room for accepting uncertainty. It makes room for saying the things are uncertain now. That isn't how it's always going to be. Mm. I understand that my present moment is my present moment, and that will change from moment to moment. Like, you know, what was in the past is in the past. I mean, these things that have just become a repeated phrase sometimes loses its power. But if we break it down, if we go down to the foundation of something, what do we mean when we say the past is in the past, the future is in the future, and all I have is the present? Essentially, what has passed, we have no control over.
Mm.
Because the only presence we have, the only reality we have is now.
Mm.
And essentially, it allows us to regain agency over our lives.
Mm.
And so I'd say the two characteristics of mindfulness that really appeal to me is in how agency giving it is and the integrative nature of it. It requires no change.
Mm.
All it requires is acceptance and awareness.
Mm. I love that. And it's not another, because, you know, I think there's a lot of overwhelm already, right, with things that change, but also our to-do list. You're talking about, you know, scheduling and changing our appointments, and we already have so much on our plates. I think with the trendiness of mindfulness, a lot of, you know, apps have come out, and there's amazing and incredible tools, apps or, you know, journals or anything physical. But if you just kind of strip it down to the real definition of it and the simplicity of it, it is just, we have it with us all the time. It's there. It's another, it's like breath, right? You always have your breath. Exactly. You always have this opportunity to be mindful without having to, oh, well, I better, you know, schedule in my 10 minutes of, you know, mindfulness. And maybe that can work for some people, but it's just coming down to the basics of, it's there with you. You have this agency at whenever you choose to tap into it, you know.
Exactly. And that's the most empowering thing. And that's why I advocate so wholeheartedly for mindfulness and meditation, because I'm going to return to this and I'm going to say it's very anti-capitalist. It's like a technique, a tool, a movement of resistance, because it's saying that who I am is enough. I already have everything I need in order to move through this set of techniques, or I already have what I need, which is just, which is literally just shifting my awareness.
Mm.
I don't need any, of course, apps are helpful, and I will make recommendations on those apps, because it forms the foundational information or the knowledge that we need in order to begin our own practice. But we need not pay for anything. We need not buy anything. We need not obtain anything that we don't already have, which is, and the thing that we have in it, which is ourselves. Of course, I understand that there are biological limitations on the self. So when I say infinite, I more mean that we have our breath and who we are for the span of our lives.
And how can this awareness and this, you know, acceptance and this present moments of non-judgment, how can they help us kind of maybe reframe our uncertain situations, or at least manage them or deal with them? And then secondly, how can self-compassion, is another aspect to this non-judgment and this idea of not being so hard on ourselves, or trying to, like you said, find that silver lining or talk down our experiences. Yeah, how can we move towards this compassion and this mindfulness during these periods of transition?
I think more than ever before in the last 2 years, I've drawn on my own practice so, so prolifically, so wholeheartedly. And that's why I can sit here and I can say to you, these are the tools that have actually pulled me through 2 years of like deep uncertainty. And that was in the moment. There's a morning practice that I have it's very short, but it's just waking up and setting the tone for the day. And it's not something that is naive. It's actually just waking up and I'll just say, thank you for this day. That's the first thing. And that just feels like it's like a wand over the day. It's like whatever was there previously, I'm changing the tone of this day. And that is, no matter what it is, I thank you for this day. And then just going through a few affirmations and I'll just say things like something as simple as you start off by just saying your name. So my full name is Monique Sundri Lakshmi Rogers. I am 29 years old. I am alive. I am present. I am grounded. I am wise. I'm here. I am present. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll even say ones that I need double. Mm-hmm. I mean, that takes 1 minute, Kylie. Mm-hmm. That's 1 minute. And before I even get out of bed, before I brush my teeth, before I put in, like literally as I am, just from dreaming to waking, I'm setting the tone of the day. And honestly, you know, that doesn't change what happens in the day. Whatever will happen that's challenging will still happen. Mm-hmm. But it's how I react to it or like my... How I respond to those situations. I remember that. So there's the practice of a morning practice, which just takes up to from 1 to 1+ minutes. You know, sometimes I'll be in my bed for up to 10 minutes just going through affirmations, but also thinking about how I'd like to take on the day. And those are just for me. Those minutes are just for me. And I just lie there and it's a very gentle, nourishing space. Something that could be more accessible in terms of, I know that the language that I use around certain things doesn't really hit home for people who have had obviously a different background. I mean that I know that the language is quite soft and that may not resonate with certain people but I have something different to offer different people. And I know that this has helped me like in the lowest of the low, in the most challenging of times, is just to say, whatever is happening will pass. I know this to be true. As my past has changed, my present will change too. Whatever this frustration or the waiting period of, or whatever it is that I'm experiencing now, is only temporary. It is only temporary. We are in a constant state of movement, in a constant state of change, in a constant state of flux. And so what mindfulness does is it recognizes that no present moment is constant. It helps us cognitively process that we are constantly moving. And so our present does change. Our present moment does change and will change. Yeah. And sometimes I hear this out loud and I ask myself, like, how relevant is this in the most extreme of cases in like what we know to be true happening in China, you know, with changes regarding COVID and how, you know, how that can be limiting and I want to go as far as saying oppressive, or even in the Ukraine, what's happening. How does what I'm saying hold up to situations like that? You know, I think of questions like this and I think of them with regards to my teaching. What am I teaching if I were to sit with, or if that were my situation, if that were my reality? I think that's important to note, is that, you know, we hold that there. And what I have in response to that currently isn't a whole full answer. It's not my end answer. Mm. But what I have at the moment is, we each do what we can with what we have. And I know what I've offered has helped me. And that is all that I can offer. And I return to what we said initially, Kylie, is that if you feel that this is something that you would like to try, try it. Take what you need and leave the rest behind, which is something that I start my sessions with. And I may have even said this to you in your session. I probably did, Kylie, in the training that we did together. It's something that I say to students at the beginning of our series of workshops together, is that, yeah, take what you need and leave the rest behind, because we can't possibly carry everything.
So you mentioned, you know, just a couple tools there around your morning routine or ritual, which is really beautiful. Just starting with, like you said, that tone of gratitude, and no matter what the day brings you, you've kind of, you've already had that self connection, right? Or that moment of, okay, you know, whatever comes or happens, you know, throughout this day, I am here, I am safe, I am, you know, all the words of affirmation you use. And throughout, you know, if you do have a challenging or something happens throughout the day that does, like, you know, maybe it is a feelings of frustration or sadness, or you made reference to China and what people are experiencing in Shanghai at the moment with the lockdown. These deep feelings of, you know, maybe feeling alone or feeling stuck during those periods, you know, how can we, so we can sit with that moment and feel what we need to feel, right? That would be part of that mindfulness of just, I'm sad right now, and that's okay. And I know we joked about this before, but as being South Africans, I think it's kind of, it's innate to us, because, you know, unfortunately, we do see some unfortunate things in South Africa. And there is, you know, some people have go through a lot of, you know, trauma or traumatic events. But we do end up saying, like, well, you know, it could have been worse, or it's not so bad, I'm fine. So we do sometimes downplay those feelings of sadness, but almost in response, it's like a inbuilt coping mechanism, right? Rightly or wrongly, but we're just, it's kind of, maybe we're not fully processing it, but it's just, okay, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. It could have been worse. I didn't die. I didn't, how do we process and acknowledge those feelings compassionately, but then also move through them or move past them in a healthy way, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm also, just because before we started recording, we had a brief little laugh about it. And I'm really happy that it's coming up again, because I think that there are things that I was saying to you, like, there are things that I can offer in terms of tools and techniques that are universal. And then there are things that are very specific to different nations or context, contexts or set of circumstances, such in the case of South Africa. And so there are things that are very embedded in the culture, like what we're talking about now. If something severe happens, we often quickly follow up with, it's not that bad, you know, could be worse. And, you know, we didn't die. Things are okay. And which, of course, is the truth. You know, you didn't die. Things absolutely could worse. Things could always be worse in the same way that they could always be better. But this sort of mentality was put in place, and this is just my own narrative creation around it, but it was just put in place as a means of survival for generations before us. And that no longer is applicable. So we can change that now. We don't have to wholeheartedly accept what was being given to us that worked previously, but we no longer need to use. So we're in a situation where you don't have any agency over. So if you do need to be okay, if you need to just get through the situation, you can say to yourself, this could be worse. I am okay now. Until you are in a safer space, until you can unravel and say, that actually wasn't okay. I am not okay. I am upset. I am sad. I am, you know, those things. There is a time and a place. So recognizing first and foremost the context, your environment. If this is something that you're sharing verbally, who am I speaking to? Can I openly share with this person? Can I be held in that way? Will I be heard? Am I ready to be honest, you know, am I ready to say that situation wasn't okay? So it really also, it depends on who you're speaking to. It depends on the time, and it depends on if we're ready. And often I find that my safe space is often away from the situation. It's often or if it is in a situation, I'm being held by people who understand me. I'm being held by people who have my back. And then I can say, actually, this is really not okay.
That completely makes sense. And I guess to give you an example, we can use my quarantine example, I guess, which is something we were talking about.
Thank you.
So, you know, went back to South Africa, traveled back into China, but I had to quarantine, right? And it was 26 days in total, right? So that's the context. That's the period of time. And I guess during that time, you are just in this mode of, it is a survival mode, right? I need to do this. Exactly. This is my outcome. This is my objective. I need to get to the other side. These are the things I need to do to get there.
So Kylie, you were traveling from South Africa. You are South African. You went into China. And there was this 21 days mandatory once you arrived in China, but there was also this crazy 5 days that you had to spend in South Africa in a hotel.
That's right.
So before you even left the country you were in. So you have this 5 plus 21 equating to 26, close to a month.
So I had to do 5 days in Johannesburg in South Africa before boarding the plane, and then flew into Guangzhou, which is in the south of China. And I had to do, on arrival, there is a mandatory, it changes depending on the city you're in, but generally it's around 14 or 21 days. So I had to do the 21 days on arrival in Guangzhou. So, you know, all in all, you're in a hotel room for a month, right? You don't have a washing machine and you're eating food that maybe you're not quite used to, or you don't have the same you know, choice or flexibility around it. So a lot, and you have no freedom. You can't go out, or so a lot is restricted. And I mean, they were really just tough days where I was like, well, you know, I'm going to spend the day in bed because
So I think this is a really good example, connecting this to what we were saying previously with regards to recognizing when to acknowledge, when to process, and when to, you know, it's okay, or if it's not okay, when to recognize, because there's this very South African saying of it could be worse, that was very much rooted in survival, and that allows us to navigate the situation without being defeated by the situation. So I started, you can just say, like, it's okay for the time being. It's okay now. You know, I just need to move through this so that I can process. And once I'm on the other side, I can start to speak to my family about it. But recently I've even been acknowledging both recognizers, or like both signifiers in the situation. So if I had a similar experience, or, you know, staying with yours, is saying, in the moment, this is okay, because I know that I need to do this to return to China, to return to my life there, to return to my work, to return to my routine. But really, it is not okay. It isn't okay, but it is okay. You know, so I started doing this where I would recognize both in real time, and recognizing what the value of each of those. So I know that it's not okay, because this is a gift to myself. My honesty is my gift to myself. And then it is okay is like, I know that I need to navigate this. And so I will do this with grace, but I know that ultimately it isn't. So, you know, those recognizing that there isn't a sole identifier for each situation, that our situations are complex and rich and colorful and layered. And so something very much be okay and not okay at the same time.
Right.
The multi signifiers of a very complex situation.
Right. And and the not, just to go to the not okay-ness, right, recognizing or acknowledging and if it had at any time, if I'd been in a situation where I genuinely felt, you know, unsafe, or I felt like my health was being severely compromised, or, you know, so it is kind of, like you said, that honesty of, okay, I am okay. I'm in a safe environment. I have access to food and water. I have access to the Wi-Fi, all these small things. So like you said, the kind of weighing up the values or the situations, if at any time it reached a stage where alarm bells were ringing in my body to be like, oh, do you have any other go-to mindfulness tools that we can, you know, add to our toolbox in moments of transition or uncertainty?
I absolutely do. So I'll recap on the ones that I have shared with you. So, and they're all very nutshell practices, so to say. They're accessible practices in the sense that they don't require a lot of time initially, and they can be built on. So the first is just literally a 1 minute morning gratitude practice. So just thanking for the day and almost a blessing upon the day. It can be a thanks. It can be a recognition of what you would like that day to go like. It can also be thinking of their family members. I often think of my family members in that time. And then also affirmations. So that can be, you could do all of them, in which case it could, you know, reach up to 10 to 15 minutes, but either a gratitude, blessings on the day, affirmations, or thinking of family or how you would like the day to go. Multi-practice. The second is 1 minute of breath work in moments of adversity or challenge, literally just taking 60 seconds just to take. In the 60 seconds, you should get somewhere between 5 or 6 breaths and just allowing, just calming your nervous system. The third is when facing challenge, knowing, just taking a minute to recognize that it is only temporary. The fourth practice is putting on, and this could be a part of a morning practice, or I do this sometimes in breaks in between my my teaching, is just putting on a single song and moving to it in a very non-judgmental way, a really fun way. You know, movement is, although there is increasing research, is still underestimated because it is associated with female, it's associated with soft, it's associated with not enough, it's associated with all of these things that are not strong, steel, progressive. It has different identifiers, and because of this, it's still an underestimated, underutilized practice. It's not a silly practice. It is really, really valuable. And what that does, those few minutes, what that does in your body, or the change that you'll feel it in your body, putting on a 3-minute or 4-minute song and just releasing, dancing it out non-judgmentally, hopefully where no one can see you, where you can feel free and liberated, because those moments are far and few between. In terms of its curation or inclusion in our lives, you know, we're always meant to be held together, graceful, productive, strong, quiet, all of these things, especially as women. So I think, so those are the practices that I would leave you with: a morning practice, a breathing practice, recognizing in the moment that this is only temporary, a movement practice, even though I'm going to go for the fourth one, I'm going to include it, a writing practice. A writing practice. What that means is just journaling. This is inspired by Julie Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way. I draw on her work a lot in my sessions, especially in my mindfulness sessions. So a writing practice of writing non-judgmentally anything that comes to your mind. No, the only prompt is to write, and you can write anything that comes to your mind, your to-do list, your wishes, your dreams, your frustrations, what are you upset about, anything that comes to mind. And the idea is to not stop writing. It's just to write from one thing to the other, just moving without stopping for 15 to 20 minutes. That's my list of practices. Yeah, absolutely.
It's beautiful because it's accessible, right? It's things that most of us have, a diary of sorts. We have our breath, we have our bodies to move, we have the morning grace or the time, those couple minutes in bed before you flip over your phone and start scrolling and checking messages. So it's a really beautiful start and introduction, I think, to mindfulness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Monique, thank you for your time, for sharing, for the beautiful lessons and information and knowledge that you have shared with us.
Thank you for curating this. Thank you for putting this together that we can have this conversation. I wish you all the best for your podcast series And anyone who's listening, I hope you have a really warming day. And yeah.
Thank you, Monique.
Thank you.